Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, food writer and director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every day in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my good guests. My guest today is Megumi Wang, who is a co-founder of Kankitsu Labo, based in New York. She started Kankitsu Labo with a vision to revive the declining citrus farming industry in Japan and spread unique flavors of Japanese citrus to the world. You may have heard of yuzu or tasted it at a Japanese restaurant and enjoyed its distinctively refreshing flavor. Citrus fruits are very popular in Japan, and there are numerous regional varieties in the country other than yuzu. So today we'll discover the world of Japanese citrus fruits and how you can use them, Megumi's mission and activities to support Japanese citrus farms that are seriously in decline due to market competition and aging population. But before you start, Japan is available on the Heritage Radio Network website as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We truly appreciate your feedback. Now let's start a conversation with Megumi Wang. Hello, Megumi. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
So this is exciting. We keep hearing about yuzu and other citrus, but nobody had came to the show and discussed it deeply like you can. So first of all, to get to know you, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
Okay, so I was actually born in Saitama, Japan, but I grew up in Minnesota. And I moved to the United States when I was 9. So mainly growing up, I ate my mom's cooking and she would make fusion Japanese food. Because back when I first moved to the United States, we didn't have many options for Japanese pantry goods in Minnesota. So she would make her own mirin and she would make food that are popular in Japan and that are like home-cooked meal in Japan using ingredients that she had to be creative with.
Mm, wow. Sounds like your mom is a very hardcore Japanese. Because nobody, I've never heard of someone in my friend's community or parents' community made mirin by themselves. So it must be very, very hard work for making it happen in Minnesota. Right. So you founded Kankitsu Labo in 2022. So Kankitsu means citrus, fruits in Japan, Japanese. So why did you start Kankitsu Labo?
So the reason why I started Kankitsu Labo was when I had this first vision and learned that yuzu was getting really popular in the United States. And I was wondering why yuzu all of a sudden became so popular. So I started doing the research for it, and that's when I also found out that a lot of the farmers and makers in Japan are closing their doors and farms due to a lack of interest and citrus amongst Japanese population. And I happened to be able to speak Japanese and English, and I happened to have both cultures background. I always wanted to do something that only I could do. And I loved citrus growing up, and I loved eating. So that's when I was like, well, maybe this is my calling, that I should fine, I should use this popularity of yuzu and spread the flavors of yuzu and other citrus harvested in Japan to the world or to United States since I speak English and Japanese.
Right. That's interesting because citrus, people tend to think about something like lemon, which is always available. But I recall maybe a decade ago or something, all those French chefs started to go crazy about yuzu juice. And I heard they're sold out in this country because it's such a more gentle, like subtle flavor than lemon. So you can use it more conveniently to control that freshness, like refreshing the level of flavor, balancing with other ingredients. So I think you came to this world of citrus at the right time. And I think definitely that was your calling, the right calling that you really accepted. Right. So let's talk about Japanese citrus fruits. So there's so many types of uniquely Japanese citrus. And so like if you look up Japanese citrus, there's so many because they keep developing the new varieties as well. So what is the history of Japanese citrus?
So the history of Japanese citrus actually goes back to year pre-100 in Japan. The first Japanese citrus that we know of, that's Japanese native citrus, is a citrus called tachibana, which is similar to tangerine. And we know this because it was indicated in the Kojiki and Nihon Shoki, like those traditional books that were written back then. Around the year 700 was when we first discovered yuzu in Japan. Around 1700 is when we got sudachi. 1850 is when we first discovered orange and lemon in Japan. And around 1960 is when we first got blood oranges in Japan.
Right. Well, that's interesting because the tachibana you mentioned, the first citrus kind of recorded, you can see it as an emblem of some families. And it really shows how old it is and centuries old. And Kojiki and Nihon Shoki, these are said to be the oldest Japanese history books. So, yeah, it really shows how history goes back, how far it goes back in Japanese kind of diet, eating citrus. Right. So citrus fruits are highly regional products in Japan. So what areas of Japan are famous for producing citrus fruits?
So I think as a Japanese person, everyone would say that Ehime Prefecture is known for producing the most amount of citrus in Japan. Ehime is also known to be called as Citrus Kingdom, and they have their own mascot that is like a tangerine bear looking one. Her name is Mikyang-chan. But actually, Tokushima Prefecture is known to be number one prefecture for sudachi production. Oita is known for their kabosu. So each citrus or each prefecture kind of has different citrus production abilities and the traditions and history that they go back many, many years ago to.
Right. So basically, western part of Japan, like mainly Shikoku Island, and also in the south, like Kyushu, because they are warmer, they tend to have nice conditions to grow beautiful different kinds of citrus fruits. Whereas to the north, if you go to the north, there's so many different kinds of apples and other stone fruits. So Japan is such a long country and very diverse. Climate-wise. So, yeah, it's really interesting. Shikoku is really kind of the place to visit for great citrus fruits and also, of course, Kyushu. So, all right, so we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll dive into different types of unique Japanese citrus and how you can use them. So please stay with us. Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Needs on HRN, Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Akiko Teyama, and my guest today is Megumi Huang, who is the co-founder of Kankitsu Labo, based in New York. She started Kankitsu Labo with a vision to revive the declining citrus farming industry in Japan and spread unique flavors of Japanese citrus to the world. So, there are Japanese citrus to eat and those to flavor other food. I think these are two main categories. So, first, what are the most popular citrus fruits to eat in Japan?
So, the most popular one that we eat in Japan would be mikan, or also known as tangerine. But in Japan, we have different types of mikan, and the ones that are most popular, I'd say, would be Unshu Mikan from Ehime Prefecture and Arita Mikan from Wakayama Prefecture. I think in Japan, we would associate winter and tangerine since we have kotatsu. And on top of kotatsu, we would have a basket of mikan. And we would watch TV and peel the mikan and eat it.
Right. So that's interesting because Unshu and the other types of popular mikan, or the Japanese orange citrus, it's easy to peel. As you watch TV, you don't have to think, you just peel. You just focus on the screen of TV and you can keep easily peel it. And also sweet and also seedless. So, and it's, I remember now when I was at the elementary school, my friend had orange hands. He kept eating small oranges. And I mean, seriously, your hand can turn orange if you eat it so much. So that's what I learned. Yeah, from my life experience. So, okay, so the most distinctively unique citrus fruits from Japan are those that flavor other foods, like we talked about, like yuzu. So let's talk about specific citrus fruits to flavor other foods. So first of all, yuzu would be the one, because we always hear it. It's part of English as well. So what is yuzu flavor, yuzu's flavor profile, and how do you compare it to some other more familiar citrus like lemon?
So yuzu is aromatic citrus, so it adds flavor and aroma to dishes that are paired with. And it pairs so beautifully that it doesn't really crash with any other dishes that are paired with. And the way it's smelled is significantly more floral than lemon. And yuzu is very delicate too. So you do have to know how to handle yuzu aroma and flavor correctly. And I think that's why a lot of the chefs are kind of liking the flavor of yuzu, because it's new and challenging and it's very delicate. So compared to lemon, I would say yuzu is kind of more similar with the Meyer lemon, the way it smells.
Right, and it's much smaller than lemon. It's more concentrated. You don't have to have a big kind of wedge of yuzu because it's going to be too much. And also it's pretty expensive too. So you can have a very tiny slice. And if you go to sushi place or sashimi or something, it's just a little bit is enough. So that's the beauty of it. And it's relatively, I think, acidic as lemon, but it's not biting. And it's almost like a perfume, I would say. What do you think?
Yeah, so we actually have a lot of chefs in Japan who would put the yuzu juice in a spray bottle and spray it before they serve the dish, because it's like a perfume. It would really add really good flavor and aroma to the dish. So when the customer get it right in front of their right in front of them on a plate, you can first be greeted by its aroma.
Right. So how do you actually use on what kind of plates?
So from what I know, a lot of the French chefs are doing the spray at the end of, or spray right before serving, technique, and also on like sushi, you could spray it and then get the nice aroma to it as well.
Mm. Right. And traditionally in Japan, there's a kind of clear bowl of soup, and you can have just a little bit of yuzu and make it so refreshing. And there's, mm-hmm. in the soup, usually there's a umami, strong flavored umami, kombu or some bonito kind of thing. So yuzu makes it really elevated, distinctive and vertical taste. And that's the magic of yuzu. And I don't think kaiseki chefs can live without yuzu, I think. Right. So, and also I think, I mean, recent years, I've studied, say, in New York, like places like in New York, I've seen yuzu in cocktails and other like sweets. So there's so many ways you can use yuzu as you wish. You can experiment. I think particularly yuzu is becoming popular in any kinds of cocktail bars and high-end cocktail bars.
I believe so too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I actually do like to make yuzu drop martini. It's kind of similar to like lemon drop martini, but with yuzu. And I really hope that becomes more popular since it's so flavorful and it can be enjoyed by anyone.
Mm. Well, that's a good way to, if you just put yuzu martini and the other kind of martini, you can really see how yuzu is distinctive and you don't need mm-hmm. much. Again, it's very little, goes a long way. So I think it's a fun way to really enjoy the flavor of yuzu. And I'm not saying that it's superior to any other citrus, but it's unique. It's very different.
Yes.
So, and yuzu is also healthy, and there is a special day of the year when Japanese people take a bath filled with yuzu. The yuzu is floating all over the bathtub, and it's called mm-hmm. yuzu. So what is it, and what are the health effects or benefits of yuzu?
This year is going to be on December 21st. So it's basically a day where it's the shortest day of the year.
Okay, so winter solstice, that's the day of yuzu, and every year in Japan, mm-hmm. right? Right.
Yes. Yeah, so yeah. A lot of the health benefits are there because by taking a bath with yuzu with a lot of vitamin C, your body warms up, and we say that you'll be able to go through the entire winter without getting or catching a cold. But also we say that that day is going to be the day that's going to be important for us to have good luck. So by cleansing our body with yuzu, we'll be able to welcome the new year with a new mindset and with good vibes and good juju.
Mm.
And also, I think a lot of the people might think of yuzu with capybara. Japanese zoos would have capybaras take baths with yuzu, and that kind of became viral on Instagram and other social media too.
Right. Yeah, and also I think that scent of yuzu makes you feel just relaxed. I'm sure there's some chemicals to increase your blood flow or those actual scientific effects, but also it's such a, you know, visually you're surrounded by yellow colored mm-hmm. citrus and you smell so pleasantly, and why not, right? And it's the darkest time of the year and you need that. So yeah, I think people look forward to it, and I think mm-hmm. everybody should try. I'm not saying that yuzu can be expensive in America and outside of Japan, mm-hmm. but you can try with something else maybe. So so what is this next? This is the next fruit after yuzu. So, what is sudachi, which I think is not known as yuzu, but it's important. So, what is sudachi, and how do you compare its flavor profile to some other more familiar citrus like lime?
So, sudachi is actually a size of a golf ball, so it's a very small citrus. It's mainly harvested in the Tokushima prefecture. And it's actually called by a lot of the Japanese cuisine chefs as the best supporting acting citrus, because it pairs well with so many different types of dishes, and it doesn't crash like same as yuzu and other types of citrus, but it actually enhances the dish's flavor in a very nice way. And the flavor, I would say it's very unique. the juice actually kind of has this cumin-like spiciness to it, which I don't really think lime has. And the size, the visual is very different as well. And I would say it's kind of like a elevated version of lime with more complex flavoring.
Mm, right. So, yeah, and I don't know why. Is it harder to get yuzu, sudachi here than yuzu? Because I almost never see sudachi here in America.
So there are a couple of farmers that are making sudachi, but I agree with you. I don't really see it as often. And the sudachi is actually a citrus that's harvested when it's still green. So if you see a sudachi that's already yellow, that means that it's actually already out of season. So sudachi, I think the best way for you to find is maybe to go to like a Japanese grocery store and find sudachi juice in a bottle.
Right. So the fresh sudachi is like really deep, very deep colored, beautiful, with shiny skin, especially when it's fresh. So yeah, I think visually it's a beautiful citrus as well. Okay, so how do you use sudachi?
So sudachi, actually, there are different ways that it could be used in the culinary experience. It can be paired really well with white fish. It also pairs very well with rice. So we have a couple of different restaurants in Japan that would make sudachi mixed rice. And surprisingly, it pairs really well with butter as well. So if you like to put butter on your steak, I'd say splash a little bit of sudachi with that butter, and it makes a really great dipping sauce for a steak. And it goes really well with shochu as well. So I have a bartender friend in Japan who makes sudachi shochu cocktail, and it's just very beautiful. Aroma's amazing, and the flavor just pairs really well with each other.
Interesting. Just like yuzu, you can apply sudachi to beverage versions as well, which is, I think it's going to be very interesting. And traditionally, have a roasted fish or sashimi or even tofu, I see sudachi just flavor it and make it such a very kind of festive, nice, elevated flavor profile. So sudachi is really handy one, as much as yuzu. And I wish we could see it here more often, but maybe soon, hopefully. Right. And the next one, also hard to find, but important one is kabosu. So what is kabosu, and how do you compare its flavor profile to some other more familiar citrus, like lime, and also compared to sudachi? What's the difference?
So kabosu is mainly harvested in Oita Prefecture, and it has really nice and mild sourness. And it also is another aromatic citrus, and it can be used amazingly as like cocktail garnishment. Comparing it to sudachi and yuzu, kabosu is significantly bigger than the other two citrus. Kabosu is the size of tennis ball. So thinking that sudachi is the size of golf ball, yuzu is like in between the size of tennis ball and golf ball. So kabosu actually contains more citric acid, which is the source of sourness, but it also contains like a lot of sweetness as well. So it has a nice soft taste with the harmonious balance of sweetness and sourness. I'd say the aroma is also elegant as well. Sudachi has a little bit more of like a spice-like flavor to it and the aroma to it as well. And it really does not affect the flavor of like other food or like the ingredients when it's paired. It pairs very nicely with like delicate flavored dishes as well.
Right. So since kabosu is not as small, intense as sudachi, you can use it kind of more generously, like in a hot pot or something like tempura or something really like sweet and acidic. Balance makes it very versatile and
I mean, the size is, it's nice. It's kind of like less intense again. So kabocha, I think, should be here more often because it's such a handy citrus, and I'm sure it can be has a very universal appeal to anybody, and of course it can be used in Western dishes as well. So yeah. Okay, so so I hear that in the U.S. it's not easy to find available Japanese citrus fruits like we discussed, Yuzu-sudachi kabocha. So how difficult is it to grow these Japanese flavorful citrus fruits in America?
So I would say that the reason why it's so difficult to grow flavorful citrus fruit in the United States is because it just doesn't have long enough history yet. In Japan, we say yuzu takes 18 years for it to be fully flavorful and mature and tasteful. For the tree to be around for 18 years for it to produce really good yuzu. And also it has to have the right amount of temperature and the wind. So the temperature has to be really cold at morning and night, but it has to be really hot during the day for it to mature well. And also the nice amount of wind, let's say about like Setouchi area, the we also call that area like the Mediterranean of Japan. The area has perfect temperature, perfect wind, and they have a lot of citrus farms there too.
Mm-hmm. Right. Sounds like California would be, for example, a perfect place to grow Japanese flavored citrus, but we'll see what happens. Maybe you can start your own, like me.
Yeah, actually.
Right. So so you offer Japanese citrus products on your Kankitsu Labo website. So could you talk about your goal, what your goal is? You know, you just didn't want to introduce only citrus product. We have a bigger mission, I heard.
Yes. So actually, Japanese citrus industry is declining significantly due to lack of interest. And like you mentioned earlier in the talk today, that Japan keep producing new types of citrus as well. And with that in mind, there's a potential for us to be able to encounter with some new amazing aromatic citrus flavor like yuzu, sudachi, and kabocha. But if those farmers and makers that are working so hard cannot find anyone to purchase their products, then they would have to shut their doors down, their doors closed. So I thought, well, Japan is actually a small island and the average age is getting higher and higher. Not many people are willing to spend a lot of money, and not many people are there to really enjoy the different flavors of citrus that are harvested in Japan and see the importance of keeping and preserving those flavors. So I thought, hey, what can I do? My goal is to bring all these different flavors to the United States and introduce those beautiful flavors so I can give back to the Japanese farmers and makers. And also another interesting thing is that we're actually not able to bring in the actual citrus itself to the United States yet due to all the regulations. So the products would have to be, or the citrus would have to be in a form that we are able to bring it to the United States. So I hope in one day, you know, bringing all these type of different citrus flavors to the U.S. in the form of, I don't know, extract, juices, or jellies, and all those type of different products that are available in Japan, but just are not getting enough attention yet.
Right. So I heard that the declining population, especially like farming population, there's a data I found between 2015 and 2020, the farming population was declined by almost 20%. And the people over 65 years is 74% of the whole farming population, which is significant. And you can see, including the citrus industry, it's really, they're facing a serious situation.
Okay, so now you try to save them. So what kinds of user products do you offer at Kankitsu Labo?
So right now, the yuzu products that we have at Kankitsu Labo are the dry candied citrus peels and 100% pure yuzu extract. Dry candied citrus peels, we're actually using upcycled rinds of yuzu. We're drying them and coating them with beet sugar. So it's non-GMO, gluten-free, and it's great as just snacking on it, but also it's very good to pair with like cream cheese and put it on your bagel in the morning. It's a great garnishment, great infusion, great for baking and putting it on your any dishes that you might be able to want to put yuzu with. And also we have this 100% pure yuzu extract. It's technically a juice, but I didn't want to name it as 100% pure yuzu juice because it might be tempting some people to drink it as is, but yuzu, it's very strong and we don't want anyone to be drinking as is. But yeah, that one is also great to be able to make your own cocktails. You can put it in a spray bottle and do something similar to what the chefs are doing to add aroma to your dishes. And actually, one bottle of our 100% pure yuzu extract contains juices of 10 yuzu citrus.
Wow. So who do you work with to create all those products? Do you have any specific farms?
So the 100% pure yuzu extract is from Yamaguchi Prefecture, and we're using the yuzu from Hagi region. And Hagi region is actually the place that yuzu was first discovered back in the year 700. And we're using a citrus or yuzu called Kawakami yuzu. And Kawakami yuzu is known to have a stronger aroma and thick rinds. And we're actually using, for the dry candy yuzu peel, we're using yuzu from Ehime Prefecture. We're purchasing the rinds from companies that would make juices, and they would normally throw the peels away. But I think the peel itself has really significant aroma and flavor to it as well. So I work with a small maker in Ehime Prefecture that has really nice technique and passion to using upcycled peels and producing really nice flavor of products.
So how did you find those farms to work with?
I just tried a lot of different types of products, and then what I liked, I reached out to them and asked if we could collaborate and if we can work together. So I think my taste bud is a little bit confused these days because I try so many sour products, but I don't think they're sour anymore. Like, I think I'm just getting so used to it. I can take a shot of the 100% yuzu extract and feel that it's actually kind of sweet and it has nice aroma to it. But when I have some other people try it, they're like, oh my gosh, this is so tart.
Right. Well, the out of those farms at risk, are they willing to work with you and they try to find a way to kind of survive by working with you and producing new products?
Yes. So what I've actually heard from the farmers and the makers in Japan is that by their products expanding to the United States, it gives their younger generation more motivation to stay at the farm and stay back in Ehime or Yamaguchi Prefecture. Because what a lot of the younger generation tend to do is to either go to like Tokyo or Osaka, those bigger cities, to find opportunities. But by me being able to help them and work with them, they see the potential in their own business back at their home country or home area. So yes, they're very willing to work with me. Some of them kind of don't really fully get the vision of the importance of exporting their products to the United States or any other countries in the world. But I think it's also my mission and my purpose to educate or not even educator kind of a system to be able to visualize better and how we can both work together and discuss together to visualize 10 years from now, 20 years from now, how are we going to preserve these farmers and makers?
Mm, right, because I'm kind of hoping to see the same trajectory that sake industry took, because sake industry quickly declined and still going down a little bit, but the export market completely revived, that kind of pumped the energy into the aging population, and now younger generation, yeah. I heard, started to go back because they see the opportunity. So sake has become a cool beverage to succeed for the next generation. So maybe, hopefully it's going to happen. And I'm looking at your website, your peel products. That you have mm-hmm. more than just yuzu, right? So for example, yeah. You have amanatsu and the ryokan. Do you want to explain the different taste profile between amanatsu and the ryokan? Because these are also classic Japanese citrus, or the orange peels, the flavors.
So amanatsu is also, I like to call it as the sweet summer orange, since the name actually translates to that. And I think of amanatsu as a citrus that's kind of dear to many Japanese individuals. Me personally, my grandma would peel it for me when I was living in Japan, and that's what I think of. And when you try the dry candied amanatsu peel, the flavor itself is very bold. We're not using any food coloring or additives, so the flavor that you get is basically the flavor of amanatsu with a little bit of the beet sugar on it. And amanatsu actually, interestingly, pairs really well with gin. So if you like to use it as like infusion, that really works well. And just let it sit for like 24 hours and drink it on the rocks, or put like soda water in it, and it makes a really nice amanatsu highball. Also for ryokan is more in like the mandarin family. Ryokan was first discovered actually in Hagi, Yamaguchi area, which is where I source my yuzu for my 100% yuzu extract. And ryokan has really nice aroma. The flavor is so beautiful, and it goes really well with goat cheese, which I would not have been able to discover that unless I brought that back to the United States. No, because like in Japan, I don't think I would ever imagined pairing ryokan with goat cheese. Mm. And it also goes really well with chocolate. So what I like to tell my clients and my customers are to make your new elevated Japanese-inspired charcuterie board, because these peels pair so differently with different cheese, and it really adds, the little bit can add a lot to it.
Mm, right. So it makes sense, right? It enhances umami and with sweetness and the sourness. So, okay. And are you trying to develop more products with different kinds of citrus fruits?
Mm-hmm. So actually, I am working on releasing new lineup, hopefully by the summer. And it's going to be a dessert spread of three different types of flavor. But this time I am kind of trying this mixed flavor. So my yuzu dessert spread is going to be mixed with grape juice to add natural sweetness. So I don't think many people have heard of that combination before. My amanatsu spread is going to be paired with lemon, so it can have a little bit of more freshness to it. My sudachi spread is going to be mixed with lemon and yuko. Yuko is another type of citrus that's available in Japan. It's like a mix. It's like an elevated version of yuzu. So those are going to be fun to add to another charcuterie board. Just put it on your toast, or like mix it into your tea, and mix it with yogurt and so many other potentials.
Wow, I'm intrigued, because I never thought of that Western combination, and I really have to try. So when you develop products, do you visit the farms and taste together? What's the process of developing your products?
So actually, unfortunately, I don't really get to go to Japan as often as I wish I could to develop all the products. I actually have a exporting partner in Japan that is helping me visualize the product flavor, and I have them send the samples to us, and we do the testing in New York and give them back feedback. And once the product is available, then we work on New York side to come up with the packaging design so we can really make sure that the flavoring and the mission and the vision can be told to the customers who might be able to see our products lined up at a grocery store, stuff like that.
Right. So who are your customers?
Yeah, so our customers are mainly B2C clients, or our customers would just find our products on our website and purchase it. And we also have gourmet stores throughout the United States that are carrying our products. If we name a few, let's say New York Chelsea Market Basket is one of our clients. And they carry all of our products there as well.
Nice. Wow. Okay. Because I really thought there are more bartenders, for example, are very interested in trying the products, because I think you're really inspiring how Japanese citrus can be widely, diversely utilized in American cultural context to enjoy the good flavor combinations. So, okay. So what are your plans and dreams?
My plans and my dreams are kind of a little too bold to say, maybe, but I personally think that Japanese food industry is a little bit male heavy. So I kind of want to try to push myself to become a female leader in this industry. And I want to become a person who can really share my vision and what I've learned to the Japanese market, so I can really use my experience to thrive the market. But in order for that to happen, I really think I need to make sure that this Kankitsu Labo is successful. I want to be able to grow this brand in a way that many people would remember the word kankitsu and learn that word, just kind of similar to how the word umami became so popular and well-known and widely acknowledged. And I think by growing this brand, I will be able to have enough reasons for Japanese makers who may just see me as a young girl who doesn't really know anything. So yeah, I want to become, my dream is to really become a key person to uplift the Japanese food industry. And I want to find more female-driven business owners that are in the food industry to like work together and really show that we got this too.
I think you will. And, you know, being an American side of, you have the mindset, global mindset. So that's a big leverage. So yeah, good luck. And well, keep me posted. And where can we find your updates online and on social media?
Yeah, so my website is called kankitsulabo.com. Whenever we have new products, we will be releasing that on our website. And also our social media handle is kankitsulabo, K-A-N-K-I-T-S-U-L-A-B-O, on Instagram and Facebook. So yeah, if you want any updates, that's where you can find it.
Great. Right. So really good luck. And thank you so much for joining us today, Megumi.
Thank you.
All right, so listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for short topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or at kikotema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and is always available at heritageradionetwork.org and as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Engineer is Liam Warner, and thanks for listening. I will see you next week.
Japan Eats is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe. This episode of Japan Eats was made possible with the support of Dasai. Dasai supports HRN's creative, educational reporting and storytelling that drives conversations to empower, educate, and entertain through food-focused podcasts and world-class education programs.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.